Hello, all, and welcome to the Fantasy and Sci-Fi Fanatics Podcast. I'm your host, Dana Kubal. Today, I have me a very special guest, W.A. Simpson. How are you doing today?
I am great. How's everybody? I hope you're all doing well.
I got to say, as soon as I can't remember if you were in my podcast group first, if I just saw your books in terms of advertising, because that was pretty, it was nice. I have the algorithm kind of working for me now. It's been a lot of work. I'll just like everything, share everything that I like for, you know, for certain authors. But as soon as I saw your book covers, and I think you emailed me a possible message, I was like, oh yes, this is really cool. Cause you were actually on my list to contact, which is always nice, right? Cause less work for me. So. And I was like, but as soon as I got your message, I was like, wait a minute. I was like, I'm pretty sure that this was on my next round to, you know, to inquire for season four. So I thought that was really cool. So it was very serendipitous. So you're about the third author that's happened to me the last couple of months for season four. So it's just always nice. You guys were all in the first chunk of season four as well within the first 12 episodes. So that's super cool. But thank you so much for coming on today and, you know, letting me ask you some questions and letting us in on your, you know, your writing journey. So it's really cool.
Okay, I am ready.
All right, let's do this thing. So we'll start right there with that first question. What has your writing journey been like up until this point?
Okay, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. no, I'm sorry. I'd love to say, oh, everything went great and it was perfect. And no, sorry. It was very rough. I mean, when I first started out, I don't know if you saw it. I actually started writing when I was 5. And I had a family friend, I called her Aunt Janice, and she saw me writing and she said, okay, I'm going to give you this little typewriter and you can do all your things on that. And I also had an English teacher a few years later when I was around 14, and she was very encouraging. Oh, well, cool. I started sending things out when I was 14. This was before the internet. Yes, I'm old. And or you could send things via email, first off. So you had to basically go somewhere and just print out everything. And that gets expensive after a while. I am so glad now that we can just send things via email. But you either typed the book over and over again, or you typed your manuscript and then went to someplace like Kinko's.
We just talked about Kinko's yesterday at my class. Oh, really? What's Kinko's? Yeah.
Kinko's is like a smaller version of Staples.
It was awesome.
Anymore, but this was before Staples was around. So yeah. Kinko's was the only place you could go at that time to get everything printed. And that got really expensive. So I could only like maybe have one copy of the manuscript to send out. And it was just so difficult to get the copies done without somebody wanting to be paid for it. So, no, I started sending books out. I was writing mysteries at first and they weren't all that great, but when you're that young and you're just starting out, everything is brilliant. Yeah. You know, any editing or anything like that. And that didn't work out too well. It was very frustrating. I couldn't get a literary agent because, again, there's no internet. So you actually have to go to the library and get the, what did you used to call that? The writer's...
digest?
Not digest. It was a book that you could get.
Oh my gosh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it listed all... I completely forgot, but
I know what you're talking about though. Yeah.
It listed publishers, literary agents, all kinds of things, and you had to write the snail mail, and you had to put a self-addressed stamped envelope, and if they wanted you to have the copy, you had to send the typed copy. It had to be like, you know, Times New Roman, 12 points, all that stuff. And it was really hard to like do a lot of submissions because I couldn't send them the fools like I wanted to. After a while, I switched from mystery to science fiction. That was thanks to Ray Bradbury. I read a story of his and I just completely fell in love. I was walking through the bookstore one day and I said, okay, let me Let me see if there's some sci-fi stuff that I like, science fiction or fantasy. And I just fell in love after that. So then I went to, I wrote my first full fantasy novel. That was quite a while ago. I can't remember what the name of it was. It was like 40 chapters long. So again, you have the problem of having to send the full manuscript and having to get a copy. So after a while, it was just like I just couldn't get anything done because you needed a lot of funds back then to get stuff sent out. Now, of course, you don't have that problem now, which is good. But when I wrote a little young adult, it was going to be a series. Fortunately, the publisher, they weren't very good, and then they got into trouble, and then people started suing them, and they wrote to me. The lady emailed me and was like, "Okay, well, are you going to stand behind me?" And I said, "Yeah. I mean, you gave me my first chance. It's the first time I got something actually published, even though it was a small press." I said, "I'll stick with you if you stick with me." Pure and simple. She was like, "Okay, that's good. We can do that." And like a week later, she emailed me and said she was breaking my contract, just kicking me to the curb. And I was like, "Yeah." I was like, "What happened to me? I mean, I was just so confused." And then, yeah, and then they went out of business, and I had already written two and a half of this four book series that I was going to write. And I, after that happened, I was like, you know what? I'm done. I'm through. I mean, I don't know what the publishers want. I wrote to a friend and I said, I don't know what the publishers want. I don't know what the editors want. I don't know what the agents want. So I'm done with this. The problem with that is when you are a writer, even if you say, I'm going to give up, you never do. You still think like a writer. And I could be somewhere and I'll see something interesting and I'll say, oh, that'd make a good story. Oh, Wendy, stop thinking like that. So, yeah. But after that, maybe like a few years later, that's when I wrote Tinderbox for the first time. And that actually took me 5 years because life did get in the way. It tends to do that, unfortunately. Yeah. And I had sent Tinderbox out a couple of times, but I didn't get any bites. And then after that, I wrote a book called Gunslinger Witch. And I actually did that during Nano, got it done in a month. That was back in 2017, I want to say. But, I started sending that around to some literary agents. And my current agent, Ann Tibbetts, hi, she's fantastic. That's actually how I got her with Gunslinger Witch. And she sent it out and it didn't get any bites. Right now, it is actually at Bane Books. So we're waiting to hear from them, hopefully next month. And she just sent it out to Wednesday Books. That's that new imprint. I think it's, is it St. Martin's who has that? I don't know. I'll have to look it up. But anyway, so after Gunslinger Witch didn't sell, she said, well, do you have anything else? And I said, well, I have this fantasy novel called Tinderbox. You want to see that? And that's what got me published. That was with Flame Tree Press. And it's since then it has been pretty good because it is so much easier now to get things out there. Online, you can find grants, you can find your agents, you can find information about the agents to make sure, or and the publishers to make sure you're not getting involved in a scam. You have Writer Beware with Victoria Strauss. I mean, I can tell writers right now, you guys are very lucky because yes, because now you have all this information you can go through. And back when I was starting, when I was 14, it was just rough. So I'm very glad things are the way they are now and everything sent out via email.
I do remember Kinko's. I used to wanted to be an illustrator. So I was in community college and I was like in all these art classes. And I think it was like one book. I think that's where we went to Staples because we went to Kinko's and it was like an alphabet book. And I mean, I think I end up thinking it had to have 30 pages in it. And you like designed the whole thing. And I had illustrations, I had writing in it. It was like an alphabet book of like one of my worlds that I then repurposed for one of my current fantasy settings. And it was so interesting though, because it was probably there like, oh yeah, like $80. And I'm like, this is
Oh, yeah, see,
like
that's what I mean.
I'm like, this is for a class. And we go to Staples, they're like, 35. I'm like, still steep at the time because I was making $4.25 an hour, you know, like minimum wage. But I was like, what do you do? You know, like you have to turn it in for your final project. So yeah, so don't sometimes I miss Kinko's, sometimes I don't. But but it's interesting though that you did say, you know, talked about, you know, I heard this I think it was Kevin J. Anderson said it on a podcast a while back, talking about the whole, you know, like it was this way and it stunk for a while because, you know, you had to pay for this, you had to know this, you had, you know. But now we're almost on the opposite side of the spectrum with, and I've talked to some, you know, literary agents privately and stuff, and some editors and stuff. And it's almost like the reverse, right? Now that everybody can send them stuff, it takes them a while, and you might hit them on the wrong day, right? Where they just don't, they're just like, I'm tired of going through slush and flop. And, you know, they might just read yours. I had somebody, an author on recently, they're like, don't tell this story with my name. I'm like, that's fine, my editor. But I could say it without names. So they has essentially their editor was like, oh, this is crap, this is crap, this is crap. They go through all these emails, right? And then they get to theirs and they're like, oh, this is kind of crap. And then 2 months later, they had already sent the rejection over. They go, wait, this is really good. Like this idea. They went back, read this person's book, and then they offered them like a contract. So I thought that was a very interesting story. So
Yeah, good, definitely. I got my coffee here.
yeah. I cannot wait to get my second cup after I get done with work today. But that's really interesting. I have to say that we have a couple of Bain authors I'm interviewing so really soon. So if you guys are seeing this and if you know anybody there, because to me, a gunslinger witch sounds amazing. Like I would read that in a heartbeat. So
Oh, thank you.
how is that not a thing already? You know, like I'm like, yes, please do that. So I just want to throw that out to our audience. If you're one of those authors listening, you call your editor, agent, or you know, help everybody out there because I need to read that now. And I feel like they do a really good job with the cover too. Just like generally, they have awesome ones. So yeah, it's super cool. All right. Well, now I have to get into our next question, which is question two. So what genre or genres do you currently write in and why? I know you talked a little bit about, you know, the genres, but why do you write in terms of these genres now?
Okay. Mainly it is fantasy, high fantasy, epic fantasy, because like I said actually recently on another podcast, because the world can be rough.
Yeah.
And and I like writing things that will help people just get away from it all for a little while. Things that you don't think are possible in a fantasy novel. And I just like the whole mystical side of it and all the research that I get to do. Believe it or not, I love doing the research because you find out so many interesting things from the medieval, not only the medieval period, but ancient Rome, ancient Great Britain, Ireland, and of course, there are a lot of African-based fantasies. I'm actually thinking of something right now that
Cool.
it's only in the planning stage. I haven't really taken care of it yet, but I just love giving the people a chance to just chill in another world for a little while and read about all the things that never really ha won't happen, or maybe, I don't know, but that happens in the outside world just to get away from it all.
I totally understand that. I've had such a month of like being a teacher where it's just like, I'm like, oh my God, I am a teacher. Like, and I feel like I've been watching Abbott Elementary season four, the next two episodes are out. And I'm just like, I just connected that show so much because not only where I started and like in Michigan in certain public schools where I'm like, I've felt it. Like I like
Uh-oh.
we literally have and I work downtown Phoenix, Arizona. So it's like I've just had some crazy stuff, you know, and kids have had, I mean, just nuts things, like things that like I had a kid, unfortunately, was leaving my classroom, left for lunch to go home in Michigan and got shot. Like, you know, like he made it, but like he got shot, you know. So people ask me, why do you want to write this? Why do you read this? I'm like, the last thing I want to do when I get done with my job, where I have to help kids through some of the worst things you can think of and, you know, help them through the other side is read fiction, you know, or whatever. I'm like,
Very,
I don't want to
very.
read that. Yeah, right. Like, I don't want to read that, you know, like, and even if it is something that's similar, I feel like if it's in a fantasy or sci-fi setting, it's almost like you don't really know if that makes sense. Like it feels different enough, right? So it's still escapism. Like, a great one is like Steven Erikson, right? Malazan, Book of the Fallen. Like a lot of similar things I help kids deal with, unfortunately, on a regular basis, or some things that are in there, but it's in a different world and there's different things going on, so you just don't notice as much. So I definitely agree with that. That escapism is definitely key. But I like also how you said, like the research. I have like what I call like a Mughal dynasty, and but like a fantasy version. And I had this like Indian spearman essentially like in my head, and he's like a veteran, and I was like, oh, that's fun. And I wanted like to do something with a city guard, kind of like cozy fantasy. It's always in the same cities at the same gate. But I did some cool stuff where I researched a lot of interesting things, like the economy of India during the Mughal dynasty, like all sorts of things. And it was just, I was like, who's coming and going? And I just added some fantasy elements and added like a little thing where it's like he first stories on the outer parts of the city, and then eventually he goes to different tiers and, you know, gets different levels or whatever. Yeah, it was interesting and a little bit of D&D, you know, level progression stuff. But it just ended up being super fun. And I was like, it's not only fun to read, I think as part of that escapism, it's also really fun to write, I think is the, you know, more important thing, I think, in the long run for a writer and author. So totally agree with you there. That's cool. Well, I can't wait to see what kind of research you've done for your gunslinging witch. So
Is the main character is and look her up. She's can I say bad words or should I
oh no,
not?
that's fine. I tell people all the time, I'm like, we put the advisory on, so I consider that a you're bad, like know what your kids are watching and listening.
She's a total badass.
Oh,
She was
nice.
the first and only African American woman in the Old West who did the whole mail carrier thing. And of course, you know how it
Oh,
was back
cool.
then. She didn't have like
Yeah,
trucks
yeah.
to drive around in. And she was unlike other women. She was a hard drinking, cigar smoking, will get in a gunfight if you look at her the wrong way, total badass again. But I first discovered her when I was taking courses. I was getting my bachelor's at University of Phoenix, and they wanted us to write an article, okay, about suffragettes. And of course, you know, everybody goes to Susan B. Anthony, and I said, well, there's got to be more than her. I wonder if there are any African American suffragettes.
Oh,
And
yeah.
I found Mary Church Terrell,
Oh.
and from finding her, and I actually want to put her in a book too someday. From finding her and just doing a bit of additional research, sometimes when you're researching one thing,
Yeah,
you
yeah.
go down this rabbit hole or go
Yeah.
down like over the river and through the woods and you find somebody else. And that's how I found Mary Fields.
That's cool.
Like, I've got to write something about her. And the book, it's an alternate Old West where people can pass through these gates, and the gates will take them to like an alternate American Old West that's full of magic and everything.
That's
Magic,
cool.
yeah, magic comes on our side of the portal, but it's better on the other side.
Oh, that's
And
cool.
in history, Stagecoach Mary Fields had a friend, Sister Amadeus, a nun who she followed out west to Montana because they grew up together. And the leader, the Let me get my thoughts together here.
it.
The nun's father actually let Mary sit in and learn with Sister Amadeus, which was, of course, totally unheard of back then. This was after the Civil War, you know, to put it in context. But during the Civil War, she was a slave, but her the master let her sit in, and she
Oh,
learned
even more interesting, yeah.
to read and write and do everything she needed to do. And she was so grateful that when her friend went out west to start a convent and orphanage, Mary followed her out. And she tried to work in the convent, but like I said, Mary, it didn't work out. She ended up actually getting into a gunfight with one of the caretakers because he didn't like the way Mary was there doing the job, and he felt, oh, she shouldn't be here. She's taking the jobs away from me. And so that's when, and she was like in her 70s when she got the job with the United Postal Service. I aged her down a little bit when that happened, but Sister Amadeus is asked her to go rescue this kidnapped orphan, a little Blackfoot girl. And so Mary has to go into the other dimension. And while she's there, she meets three other witches with various powers, and she like gets together with them because there's just, I don't want to give it away, but there's this whole bigger conspiracy going on over there, and it does involve she's the little girl is a part of it, so they have to go find out about this conspiracy and rescue the girl.
That's cool.
Yeah, I love it. I know I shouldn't be, but I have to say I absolutely love the idea. It's hopefully it will be a four book series. We're just
Oh,
waiting.
awesome.
Fingers and toes crossed, please.
No, that, I mean, that sounds amazing. But that, so this
Yeah.
takes me back to, again, with the first question that you answered, and in terms of how it used to be for the process, right? And that's
Yeah.
where I don't know, that's where, like, must have been, yeah, it was probably almost 10 years ago now. I was in Arizona, and at that time, self-publishing was like really like popping up. Like, if you could get on board, like, you were making bank, right? And or if you're writing to market or whatever, if you could hit the algorithm or whatever. But like, I had met people, I met Brandon Sanderson at that time before he hit big. Patrick Rothfuss was at the same one, Michael J. Sullivan, Pierce Brown. There were a lot of authors. I mean, it was Brian McCollum was there. What'd you say? Oh, this was in Scottsdale, Arizona, 10 years ago. They would all come with Kevin Hearn. Kevin Hearn put on this. It was both indie and traditional, right? Published authors. And Michael J. That's why Michael J. Sullivan was there. And it was so cool though, because I went through it about, I was there at 8:30. I got in about 10:30. I didn't leave till almost 9:30 at night. I went through, just kept talking to people. I was like so excited about the traditional published people. And I thought, oh, some of these other people seem really cool. I hadn't heard of them. I hadn't heard of indie publishing at the time. So and I go through, and I was end up talking more to the indie published authors than even the published authors. My friend's like, you didn't talk to Brandon Sanderson or Patrick Rothfuss. I'm like, they were so nice, but they were so jet lagged because they were going through these huge tours. But I was like, no, I was like, I was actually talking to the indie published people because I had never considered that. They're like, oh, do you write? So I was talking to them, like, what do you write? And then they're like, oh, that sounds really cool. They're like, they're like, if you look at these people over here, because they were kind of sectioned almost like inadvertently indie published and traditional, they're like, look at our books and come back and tell me what you see. So I'm like, okay. So I'm going, and I'm like, well, I'm like, you have a quote on so and so's book, same thing here. So that was one thing, was like the community itself was a lot different. But it's just interesting because it was also the books they were publishing. And I think it's so cool that within the last 10 years, like, let's say you can't sell that book to somebody, they'd be, I think, really stupid not to buy it for a four book series, because that sounds amazing. But it's nice that now you have that ability to self-publish,
Yeah.
as well, because that's a book I really want to read. I can tell you right off the bat. Like, I'm your audience. Like, I'm a history teacher. I love when people bring in people that I don't know that much about historically. I traditional fantasy sci-fi is great and everything, but I love what people are doing now in all genres, really trying to come up with a unique idea. And that's a unique idea. So to me, that just sounds really cool. So I think that's really awesome. So hopefully somebody, Bane,
Or Wednesday,
or Wednesday, yeah, either one,
maybe they'll get into what do you call the
A bidding war. Let's go.
yeah.
We can do it on the show. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
That would be so much fun. That would be amazing. That sounds awesome. Well, I hope that somebody is smart and takes that because it sounds awesome.
I
But
hope
now we
so.
get to my third question, which is always my favorite because I know how it is as a writer and as an author. You love your babies. So,
Yes.
what are your tales from the Riven Isles books about, and how did you come up with this idea?
Okay. It started off, of course, with Tinderbox. Now, you're familiar with this Hans Christian Andersen story?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I was gonna say, go read it if you're not, because it's a really good story. I was reading it one day, and I came to the end, and how in the end, the soldier who kills the old witch and ends up king and kills the old king and queen, and he does all this stuff because he has the tinderbox, and the tinderbox has the three magical dogs, and he uses the dogs to get him riches, and he used them to kill the monarchy, and he just left the old witch lying there dead as he went about conquering and doing all this stuff. And after I read it, I thought, is this really the end? I mean, this guy did all this stuff and he got away with it. And now he's king and he's rich and he's married to a beautiful woman. And the poor old lady is just still laying there on the ground decomposing. So I said, what if, this is my thought, the old woman had like an apprentice, like a granddaughter. And the granddaughter, who is Isbeth, was away in this other country learning magic. And she came back and she found her grandmother dead. And she was like, okay, I am definitely going to find and dispose of the person who did this. Now, meanwhile, the king is not satisfied with just being king of this one country. He's going about trying to conquer other countries. And every time he does, he takes a captive. And in this case, one of the countries that he took over. He took a prince named Bram. So Isbeth is trying to get to the king, get the tinderbox back. Bram wants to get to the king just so he can go home and, keep the king from further usurping other people's countries. And yeah, so I just actually worked from there. And while I was researching more about Hans Christian Andersen and his stories, there were a few that I'd actually not read before. Taromancer, yeah, that's the second one. It actually isn't from Hans Christian Andersen's story. It was actually from the Renard the Fox story, which is a French fable. Are you familiar with that?
I've heard of it. I have not read it though.
It's about a fox named Renard. He's a real jerk, and he likes to play these really cruel tricks on all the animals in the kingdom. It's like an anthropomorphic thing going on.
Interesting.
And he always gets away with it. And if somebody brings him before the king, he talks his way out of it. He flatters the king. The king's a little bit of a, nah, he's, I can't describe what the king is like, but the king easily, well, it says in the actual story that the king is easily flattered, he's easily fooled, and he's greedy. And all Renard ever has to do is either flatter him, say something to fool him, or promise him riches. And he's like, okay, Renard, you can do whatever you want. Well, in the end, he was never punished either. So I thought, what if the old king dies? And his son takes the place, and his son is not like the old king. His son is like, he's cunning, he's ruthless, he's not someone that falls to flattery, and he's not greedy, and he really cares about his people. So Renard has run off. He's in this totally far away over the sea kingdom when the new king sends people to bring him back to justice. So in the meantime, my main character, Harper, she's this young diviner, and she, has her tarot cards, but she can also use them to summon spirits from the
Oh,
cards.
that's cool.
Wow. Yeah, no, and give her certain powers. Well, she's just hanging out one day, minding her business, when one of the cards says somebody innocent is about to get hung. So she runs, finds that it's Renard. He's about to get hung for thievery. She reads her cards. He's innocent. She helps find the culprit. And Renard, of course, is grateful. He thanks her. Unfortunately, while they're standing there talking, the people after Renard see Harper and think, oh, she must be a friend. Let's kidnap her too when we go to get Renard and use her as a bargaining chip. So they do finally realize, again, not to spoil it, that she's not, they can't use her as a bargaining chip, but she has to decide whether to help Renard or whether to go back to her kingdom and save her family of the evil that is the rot. So those two are out now. They're everywhere. Barnes and Noble, independent bookstores, wherever you want to go. The third one I just turned in, it's called The Hatter's Daughter. And it is based on Alice in Wonderland. And again, and you notice how I read the stories and then questions come up. And I want to find answers to these questions, which is where I write the books. Well, in the third one, a young girl named Faith is sent to Wonderland for her safety, and she grows up there. She's adopted by the Mad Hatter, and the Queen and King of Hearts, they in the original book, they have like 10 kids. It's never mentioned anywhere, certainly not in the Disney movie, but yeah, they actually the King and Queen of Hearts has a bunch of kids. And the oldest, and this is not from the book, this is my creation. The oldest is Prince Rowan, and he and Faith used to play together as kids, but then as they got older, they kind of drifted apart. Well, when the evil force invades Wonderland, they have to get together, they have to go to this other country, and it's run by a woman called the Spinner Queen. And she is actually the woman from Rumpelstiltskin, the girl who had to spin the straw into gold. Well, in my version, she could actually do it. The Rumpelstiltskin was this fairy who like helped her out, but she already knew how to do it. So, she spun the straw into gold. The king married her, and she says, "Okay, I'm gonna keep honing my power, and I'm gonna do all this other stuff." So now she can use her power to make armor and make weapons and all kinds of other things. And they have to go to her to get this armor made so that they can go back to Wonderland and fight for it. Alice is in it, but she's not a main character. So, like I said, again, I don't want to give more away. The fourth one I am currently working on, and I need to, as soon as I get done here, I need to get to it. It's called Steelbound, and it is based on the John Henry story.
That's cool.
It has two characters, Lucia, who is actually in Taromancer, and a dark elf called Ursa. And Ursa has to find the hammer and use the hammer again to save their world. Yeah. So that's pretty much it in a nutshell. It all came from me reading stories, and then the story ends. And when the story ends a certain way, and I don't like it, I always say, or I'm wondering, like, why did it happen this way? And what if something else happens to this person? Or, this person needs a comeuppance. That's where the stories come from.
I think that's an awesome way to do it because they have was that the Pied Piper, and I had listened to a podcast where they told a story about it was like a World War One thing, and they were close to the place in Germany where the fable came from. So I thought that was really interesting. And so I thought to myself, like, oh, that's interesting, and And but they talked about the Piper being essentially like almost like a malevolent force, if you will. And it was interesting. So I kept thinking to myself, like I looked it up and I was like, is this really, was this guy right? Was this podcast correct? Was it from this region? And I looked and I was like, oh, I think it's like Hamburg, Germany or something like that, or Austria or whatever. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting. And then I went and more looked into it. I was like, what if the Pied Piper was not stealing the children? What if it, what if he was the good guy? What if the, right? What if the, so I've started a little bit. I was like, what if he was the good guy and he was, and then like, you know, we didn't get the real story, right? He took the children, but you never really find out why. But you find out why people after lied about it, why it was easier for them to blame him versus the other people that I have as the real villain of the story. It's just, absolutely, it's fun to do that. So,
You're writing that now, or is it already out?
I put it, it's on my shelf. I started it and then I had a couple things to figure out. And currently I'm just like, I have like three novellas that I have in the pipeline for next year. And then I actually just fixed, I wanted to do something with my urban fantasy character. He's a monster hunter. He's an ex-marine, and the my prequel trilogy is like where it tells you like what happened and why. But the cool thing was is I was trying to figure out, and I just want to point out to the audience, this is how it happens, right? Like you're reading or listening or something, and I saw an article about The Great Hunt, and I was like, I want to do something with his first book. Like real book, like full length book to be about the Great Hunt. And I couldn't figure out how to do it. Nothing was working. I had a bunch of stuff written, nothing was working. So then I last week there was an article that talked about the supermoon. And I was like, what's a supermoon on Facebook? And then I look, it's like, oh, the harvest moon. And I'm like, oh, okay. And so then I was like, oh, that's interesting. And I looked at this article and it was telling me all the mythology about it relating to the Great Hunt. Or Wild Hunt. And I was like, well, oh, that's interesting. And it reminded me some points of The Great Hunt for like Robert Jordan and aspects he was trying to capture. I think he did really well, but it was still from that main mythology. And it ended up where I was able to come up with it. And I ended up finding like a Celtic song, like a Celtic rock band that had a song. And then I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. So it, like a bunch of pieces came together. Now it's like really neat. So the first one I have is called like The Hunter's Moon. And it all just kind of fell into place because of one little article that I clicked on Facebook. So it's like 2 years worth of work all of a sudden. So I end up outlining like 11 chapters like right off the bat. So it is funny, right? How you get done reading something. I think those are the stories that if it sticks with you where you feel like you have to write something, I think those are the things you have to write, you know, because I think that's the story that wants to be told and needs to be told. So I think it ends up being better, even if it takes you a while or whatever. But yeah, that's super
Absolutely.
cool.
What is that Pied Piper one though? Because I want to read that.
Oh yeah, well I have a couple of cool characters because I don't know, I just I wasn't really a fan. I know people are gonna like hate me, but like Grimm the TV show back in the day, like it was decent, but like I wanted there to be like two brothers, and off of the Heath Ledger and Matt Damon Brothers Grimm, I actually really liked that movie. So I went to watch Grimm and I was like, yeah, I like it, but not as much as the movie. So I went back and watched the movie. And then the Hansel and Gretel movie came out. Oh my gosh. With Jeremy Renner, and I'm blanking on her name. I love her. She's such an amazing actress. She's like 17 of my characters from all these different movies like Clash of the Titans, the second one and stuff. So I can't believe I'm blanking on her name. But she's amazing. So she was so cool. And I was like, oh, that's a really cool character. And it made me want to put other really cool characters like that with the Pied Piper. So he actually is like part of a crew and not just himself. And there's a little bit of, I love D&D. So there's like a little bit of D&D aspect in there. But it just has been so much fun because I was like, what other stories or miss, I'm like, could I pick from? Kind of like you have, I'm like, I have a witch from somewhere, don't want to give it away, which story, but I was like, oh, that like he would need help to rescue all these children from an entire town, you know? And then I had a couple, then I was like, oh, the problem is I need a couple other people. So I had a couple of other people and end up, my friend's like, it's like a fable, like you just take a bunch of, like, it formed a D&D party from fable stories. With the Pied Piper, this witch, and these two other characters that are in the story later. And I was like, yeah, it's just really cool. And it just has been a lot of fun So I had a couple things to work out. So I am interested in going back. I love the fables. I think the history about them. I think, like you were saying, there's like, if somebody needs their up and comings, and I'm like, yeah, I'm like, feel bad for the Pied Piper always getting this, this negative Nancy aspect. So I'm always like, why did he do that? Like, I know they didn't pay him for the rats and stuff, but like to take someone's children. So yeah, I always thought that I didn't like the ending, so I want to change that. So I think that's a really good thing to do as a writer. But it was like the
Absolutely.
Lost Legion. I'm like, they said now they're like, oh, we think it was a clerical error. Like they think they ended up in Hispania somewhere. And I'm like, really? I'm like, one of the most like the top two legions ever. So I put them with zombies in the UK. Like you think it's they're fighting the Picts, they go to fight the Picts, and then they both have to end up fighting zombies, and then I have some stuff happening after that. So I'm like, it was unsatisfying of an ending for me. So I think life is stranger than fiction. So why not throw some zombies or magic or something in? So I think that's really cool.
Sounds good to me. I like
Yeah. Well, I
it.
loved the title, like Mad Hatter. I was like, oh God. I was like, anything with the Mad Hatter, I've just been obsessed with, because when I was in Arizona, same year as I went to this conference or this thing at the Poison Pen with all these writers, I went to the Phoenix Comic Con. And there was a booth, and they had a Mad Hatter story. It was both a book and a graphic novel. Remind me, I'll have to look in my collection. I'll send you the title. But it was, if what if Alice was a princess and the Mad Hatter came to Earth and had to rescue her and then protect her? And he had like his hat had like knives and blades in it. He had
Oh.
and he had magic. Like it was so. Such a cool concept, and I'm gonna have to read it. I read it years ago. It was amazing. I think it'd be right up your alley. It was so cool, and I keep thinking to myself, like, they have to have done a second or third one by now. So I got to go back read the first one. So remind me, and I'll send you the title.
Yes,
I found it
definitely.
again. Yeah, it was super cool. But I'm thinking, like, those are the kind of ideas where I'm like, oh, you take a little bit of history or a fable or a myth, and then do something interesting or unique with it. And I think that's just where the best stories are. So at least to me, I think it's really fun. So
I agree. Absolutely.
I definitely love when people do it for urban fantasy, like Kevin Hearn, Patricia Briggs. Oh my gosh. Like I love her writing. It could be whatever in urban fantasy. I haven't read her fantasy before that, but her urban fantasies I just love, with Mercy Thompson, Alpha and Omega. The last one, Wild Sign, was just so good, because she does such a good job of taking like history, magic, myth, and the real world and blending them together, where it's like, just like, you're like, that's a piece of art right there. And it's just, and I go in and I get sucked into the story right away. And I always end up getting something out of it as a reader or writer. So those I think are always like, I think that's why I like, like your type of story is when people do that, because I don't know. That's also what I like to write. So I think, that's why I like to read those things. But super, super cool. But we're gonna dive in here a little bit more. That was an awesome answer. So I'm really curious about this, for all three stories, really. How did you approach the magic system in your novels? And what did you make your what did you do to make your magic system feel real?
On the Riven Isles, it was actually created from Jack and the Beanstalk.
Oh,
Okay, you know how he got the beans, he buried them, and a big old beanstalk grew, and he went up and saw the giant. Again, we have a question. When he chops down the beanstalk, nothing really happens. Now you figure something that big and that tall, if you chop it down and it falls, it's gonna take out like a lot of land and cause all sorts of damage. So apparently the Riven Isles was created, used to be this one big continent, and then when the celestial, they call it the Celestial Vine, when it fell, it broke everything apart. So that is where the magic in the Riven Isles comes from, the Celestial Vine. Anyone with the gift can draw from the vine and do magic, and perform magic. Now, if you take too much from the vine, it will mark you. Usually it's like a tattoo or something of a vine, and you become a beholden, which means it's the vine's way of saying, okay, you took too much from me. Now you're going to help me out with whatever needs helping. all my characters became beholden because they called on the vine. They got themselves in a really bad situation. The vine got them out of it, and the vine says, okay, this is how you're going to repay me, by helping, save the world. So there is a city on the Riven Isles. It's called Jack and Irons, which is actually from Jack and the Beanstalk. Nobody knows where the name is from. Some people say Jack and Irons was the name of the giant, and then some people say Jack and Irons was obviously Jack. But all the mythical creatures live in this one city where the base of the vine is. Even though it got chopped down, it's still growing all over the land. And there are some people who are doing all this dark magic, trying to draw from the vine, but the vine isn't letting them do it. And they draw this dark, force that's called the rot. And the more people who use dark magic, the more powerful the rot becomes, and it's now trying to eat away at the celestial vine. So that is basically, that is the source of all magic in the Riven Isles. I wanted to make it something a little different because I don't think I've ever seen anything where a giant plant gives everybody the magic. So, yep, that's where that comes from.
That's super cool. It doesn't Now it's going to bug me anytime someone talks about the beanstalk falling, because it was massive. And in the movie too, right, with like Will
Yeah,
McGregor and everybody, like it just like kind of comes down. It's like,
like
well,
comes
but if it's that
down,
big, yeah.
oof. Like if it's big enough to go all the way up there and get connected to this giant island, floating island or whatever,
Yeah.
when that thing comes down, it's gonna destroy a lot. And that's how I fixed it up, that the celestial vine is the thing that created the Riven Isles, but also created the magic of the Isles.
I love the magic part too, like created the magic. I think that's just such a cool concept. And you're right. I don't know, like the only thing I could think of is like the world of Avatar, right? But it's the world itself. Like they have the tree, but it's like we don't really get them. I mean, it's more like science, right? So I haven't seen anybody do that. So that is really unique. I like that. No, that's super cool.
I need to watch that. I've never seen Avatar.
Oh man, the first one was great. Like
Huh?
and I my kids and I talk a lot about it. My juniors, last year in particular, when they were sophomores, we're talking about imperialism, colonization. They're huge sci-fi fanatics, which is fun for me, obviously. So, and fantasy. So they're like, what do you think's more probable, Dune or Avatar? And I'm like, okay, interesting question. But yeah, it's a great movie because it really made me think, like, if we encounter a alien species and we're the ones that have the greater technology, like we're probably historically not going to be very nice, right? Like to me as a historian, I'm like, I don't like their chances. So, but then it's like, you're thinking like, hopefully if somebody else came and was more advanced. I don't know. The movie just made me think a lot of different things. And the I don't want to give it away, but the way that they interact with the world, the natives, was just so cool. And I think that like spirit behind it was very similar to Dune with their natives, and their interaction with like the sandworm, and the way that they built culture. From a writing standpoint, I think that they just did an amazing job. But yeah, the problems they posed, and enduring issues that they really pose in a scientific format, for science fiction was really cool. So I would highly recommend it. I didn't see the newest one. My kids were like, don't bother. But the first one was great as well from a writing standpoint.
Okay.
Yeah,
List.
super, super cool. Well, that's awesome. I was just going to say to our audience, if you have not read some of the original stories, and maybe some of the original sources for Jack and the Beanstalk, they are absolutely fascinating. Yeah, like I loved them. I think you might go back to the History Channel. There's a couple of the sources from Ancient Aliens that they use, but I looked up some of those things. The guy's like, aliens, with the giant episodes. But it was cool as a writer because and historian, because I could actually go and track some of those documents and stories. And that led to me to a whole wealth of knowledge and things that I thought, oh, that's really cool, particularly of things I didn't know about the Jack and the Beanstalk story or where it came from. So
Yeah,
absolutely fascinating as a writer. So that's
yes,
really cool.
lot more to it if you like
Yeah,
your
yeah.
like there I and I do mention this in Taromancer, I think, where the beanstalk grew so large and it didn't get cut down immediately. Mythical creatures were like making their home inside
Yeah,
of it.
yeah.
Elves and dwarves and all those were actually making their home. And there's this one fable where Jack gets into this tavern in the beanstalk and something happens to him. I can't remember what. I'm gonna have to go back and look it up again. But really, in most of the fables, he didn't immediately climb the beanstalk and get to the giant. It took a really long time because he was doing all this exploring.
Which
So
is fair, right?
yeah.
I always love that aspect though, like of reading some of those because I always loved as a kid. And I can't remember. I think it was like the Sci-Fi Channel had the Sinbad TV show, and it always made me think of that. So I always kind of related the two stories. I read some, I forget who the authors. I've never tracked them down, but they had such a great interpretation of Jack and the Beanstalk. But it was like they didn't just have the tale, they like were using it to tell a fantasy story. And I read it in like, I think it was like, must have been in grade school, like fifth or sixth grade. And I was watching Sinbad and the Tales on Sci-Fi at the same time. And it just filled my head with all sorts of cool adventures and questions on, you know, what people were doing, you know, why would they do this? And I don't know, it was cool. I always thought that story was really, really neat. So I think that's cool that you went that way with it. So that's really interesting. Now I'm like, what other plant-based magic systems can you come up with? That's in my head now. That's super cool. So you kind of talked a little bit. That kind of goes into, you know, the world building in particular. But so was like the magic system and the stock itself, was that kind of your focus from that story with the world building, or and was that the approach you took, or did you kind of go about that in a different way?
It was the beanstalk that was the
Cool.
catalyst for the entire story. I just found it so interesting how most of the versions have Jack, you know, he gets the beans, like I said, he climbs up, he chops it down, that's it. It's like, and again, this is one of those questions, there's got to be more to it. And when I went ahead and did my research, that's when I found all these other interesting things that supposedly happened to Jack when it came to Jack and the Beanstalk. And it doesn't seem like anyone, and not that I found, I'll say, that anyone ever touched on these other things, like about all the mythical creatures actually living inside the vine. What happened to them once the vine fell and, you know, everything was destroyed? So that is basically what the Riven Isles is. It is all around the Celestial Vine. Pretty much everybody worships the Celestial Vine. There are some people that don't, but you mainly, especially people who are gifted. I know that's a term that a lot of people use for magicians and magic workers. And yeah, and in this world, you have witches, necromancers, sorcerers. And oh my goodness, I forgot the last one. I just can't believe I forgot this
Been
one.
there.
Necromancers, witches, and sorcerers. And those are like, and they all have their little offshoots. For example, although Harper is a witch, she's a diviner. Each one has their little offshoots. Like, for example, someone who's good with the elements, depending on which element, they could be a witch or they could be a sorcerer. The sorcerers deal with elements of like the air and lightning and the cosmos, that type of thing. But they couldn't do earth magic at all because that's not their purview. That's totally witches. And of course, you know, necromancers, they deal with the dead and that type of thing. And they have all those little offshoots as well. I'm hoping to like get deeper into this. This isn't my first visit to the Riven Isles. I'm hoping to do more like later on down the road.
No, it's really cool. That's awesome. Well, that's very interesting. I always love when there's something like that that you can just like you're like, yeah, this is my thing now. Like this is where I get like everything else can come from. It's just I just think It's so much easier, I think, because it's more unique and you're like, you have enough ideas because you've heard tales or read Jack and the Beanstalk, right? But then you can easily combine it with like you're saying, these different aspects of the world or world building or magic system with these other types of, witches or whoever are necromancers, like these different characters or classes, or however you want to say it, right? But it's kind of nice because you can easily combine those things because if there's a magic beanstalk, right, or giants or mythical creatures, the rest is there too. So I think that it's kind of nice because for you and for your audience, there's other assumptions that are already there and you can easily build off of that. And I think that's what's really cool is you kind of gave yourself your own Lego there, right? That's everything after that's just easier to build off of. So
Yes.
I think that's like super cool. So we'll go with that sixth question because I have to know. What is a Terramancer and how did you come up with this idea for book two? I just think that's such a cool title and I love the cover of all of them, but that one is really cool.
Actually, I have my agent to thank for that. I was having trouble finding a title for it. And it came from the question about Reynard the Fox. But Harper, the Terramancer, is the main character. The story follows her more than anything. And I had named it something else. I can't really remember what it was. And my agent and I, we were going back and forth on the names. And she said, you want the name to go with Tinderbox and you want to make sure it tells the story. And I said, well, I am thinking of calling it Cardomancer. Now, a Cardomancer is someone who does magic through the cards. Now, and then my agent says, well, she's a tarot reader, right? And I said, yeah. Well, how about Taromancer? And I was like, oh, perfect. So that
Yeah, that's
was
awesome.
just one of those things where it was her idea. And like when she said it, I was like, that's it. That's the title.
That's
My
super
agent
cool.
is fantastic.
That's really awesome. Yeah, I gotta say, that's like definitely one of my favorite titles that I've seen recently. I'm like, okay, that's really cool. And that with the cover, I was like, I think that's actually the first book I saw of yours. I was like, oh, this is super cool. Yeah, so that like definitely drew me in. I was like, I gotta know what that is. So, but that's a really cool story of how she came up with that and you guys were able to connect that. That's super neat. All right, so my favorite question. As somebody that writes, and I always think about this myself, if you could ask one of your characters a question, who would it be and what would you ask them?
Let's see. Probably Harper, since she's the diviner, and I could probably get an answer from it.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, I would probably say, hey, am I going to be a New York Times bestseller?
Oh, that's a good question.
So, yeah, because that's the only thing I want to know right now. It's like, hey,
Yeah.
how well are these books going to sell? Hopefully, she gives me a good answer.
Yeah. That's awesome. I don't know. Now all of our authors are and creators are heading to Terramancer right now to get that answer. So that's a good one. I wasn't considering that. That's really cool. I always love asking people. I always get the craziest, like most unique answers. Like you, my friend's like, oh, I'm sure everybody will say the same thing. I'm like, not one of you out of like maybe the 30, maybe like 28, I think so far have said even remotely the same thing. So I think that that's so interesting. So that's really, really cool. Well, that's really neat. Well, I look forward to reading those. I'm really excited. I have book one sitting on Kindle, so I'm really, really hoping work slows down somewhat soon. I have because I've been struggling to finish my novella's fifth draft. So I know as soon as I'm done with that, and it's the beta draft. So I know as soon as I'm done with that, I'm going to be in like the reading, you know how it is, and not the writing mood. So I'm sure I'll be tearing through my current list and getting there
Right
quicker.
now.
Yeah, exactly. So I understand how you feel. As soon as I get done tonight, I gotta start ripping through as well. We'll go with that last question just so we have enough time here. I want to make sure our audience knows. What do you have any current projects, news updates, anything like that that you can share with us?
Well, The Hatter's Daughter is due out on April 15th of 2025. And like I said before, my books are pretty much available everywhere online and in bookstores. I actually, after that, I'm going to be working on a science fantasy called Immortal Stream.
Oh, that's good.
It's about, yeah, it's actually about the apocalypse, except it's a good thing. It's not it doesn't destroy the
Oh,
world.
cool.
These aliens coming down and they're running from an enemy, and they say, "Hey, Earth, if you protect us from the enemy, we're going to give you all these advances in
That's
medicine,
cool.
science, and we're going to help you clean up your world." But of course, there are others who want us to go back with the way it was before, with the polluting and fracking and deforestation and all that, because it's easier to make money that way. And my main character is part of this spacefaring group that protects the aliens. And she and her little group of friends have to stop these people from basically destroying the earth again, just so they can make money. And I have a middle grade contemporary fantasy called The Girl of Morning Glory. And it is about a doll who is given life because she has to answer questions about life and about death. And I'm pretty good through that. Hopefully I'll have that done soon once I get Steelbound done. But if you want to see examples of what I'm working on, you can go to my website under WIP, Work in Progress, and it'll tell you like all about the things that I am working on
Cool.
right
That's awesome. I love your website, by the way. I really do.
now. This is it in the background.
I was on it the other day. I was like, oh, I really like this website. Because I think I had just been on like Amazon or Goodreads or something. So when I was like, oh yeah, I always like to go to people's website. I always get something good out of there. But yeah, it was a cool one. So I just wanted to point out to our audience, so if you guys are new, you just go to the description. I know it seems redundant, but anywhere where you are watching or listening to this podcast, Wendy's links, everything will be down in the description. So make sure you guys take a look there, get any news updates, things like that. So we just want to remind our audience, we're really trying to push really like the last three seasons almost, but it's just so important every time we talk to somebody, those reviews for products that helps people who are authors, people who are creators, people who are artists, people who are copy editing, proof editing, editors, things like that, agents even too, right? So it just helps everybody in general. So if you guys could just make sure you do that once you're reading or listening or watching a product, that would be absolutely awesome because we want more products from everybody. So I think that's the best way to do it. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on today. This was awesome. I look forward to seeing what you're doing in the future, and I can't wait to talk to you again and kind of check in the spring or something like that and kind of see where you're at with everything. So it's going to be really exciting. So that's
I
awesome.
had so much fun. Thank you so much for having me on. I love
Yeah,
doing it.
not a problem. Remind me though on Facebook, and I will, when I get home this weekend, I will take a look and I'll send you the Mad Hatter story because I think it'd be like right up your alley. So it was super, super cool, but I think you enjoy it. That's
Sounds
awesome.
good.
Well, I hope you have a great rest of the day. If you need anything at all, my friend, just hit me up on a Facebook message and we'll chat and I will help you as soon as possible and look for my email and I'll send you this scheduled episode and we'll be all set. So
Excellent. Thanks very much. You have a
no
great rest
problem.
of your week, a good
You
weekend.
too. Thank you so much. I'll see you later. Have a good rest of the
Bye.
day.
Bye,
Bye.
everyone.
See you guys.